This is Fresh Air. Later on the show, Congressman Bob Forehead and his creator, Washington cartoonist Mark Allen Stamity. Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has his picks of the 10 best albums of 1990, but before he shares it, he has a few disclaimers.
In 1990, there were a lot of very good jazz records, but few great ones. So be advised that if I made up my 10 best list a week from now, it might be a little different. I'm also skeptical of lists that are loaded with recent releases. There are a couple of new albums I like which I didn't include because I haven't lived with them long enough to know if they'll hold up. I'll review them for you soon. And although in any given year a lot of the best jazz comes out on obscure labels, I've limited myself to albums that should be fairly easy to find. So, anyway, in no particular order, here's my top 10. The best jazz album of 1990 was actually a series of three records by pianist Randy Weston. On Portraits of Duke Ellington and Portraits of Thelonious Monk, he plays music by those composers. On Self-Portraits, he performs his own stuff. Weston's lean and percussive style owes a lot to Ellington and Monk, but also to the years he spent living in Africa. He makes the piano ring out like a West African drum choir. These records sound great on first listening and stand up to repeated exposure. There's also a Randy Weston tune on the year's best vocal album, Abby Lincoln's The World is Falling Down. She's a classic example of a singer with a limited range and a harsh vocal quality who can really put over a song.
People walking around, living in a daze, high above the ground with their snooty ways, putting people down, acting phony while they fly.
1990 was a year when jazz began turning back to composers for guidance. The best writer for big band nowadays is Muhal Richard Abrams, who knows the history of the music as well as any young bebopper you read about in Time magazine, but who recombines elements from the past in his own ingenious way. His latest album is called The Haringa Suite. Another fine big band album, the New York Composers Orchestra, that's the name of the band and the CD, featured diverse compositions by four younger writers, including Wayne Horvitz and Robin Holcomb. The quintet album, Wide Open Spaces, by bassist Michael Formanek, was the most smartly orchestrated small group album this year. It's not just that Formanek gets a wide range of colors out of a unit that contains alto sax and violin, but that he keeps his pieces admirably short. This music's concentrated. As far as traditional small group jazz goes, two of my favorites were by tenor saxophonists. Billy Pierce's trio album, Equilateral, avoided sounding like just another good mainstream date because his band had no bass player. That made pianist Hank Jones and drummer Roy Haynes work that much harder. And cool jazz veteran Stan Getz came out with a live album called Anniversary, which showed how beautiful his sound remains. Great band, too. Pianist Lenny Tristano was another instigator of cerebral cool jazz in the 1950s, but saxophonist Anthony Braxton's album, 8 plus 3 Tristano Compositions, 1989, turns everything Tristano stood for on its head. Most of it is fast, hot, and messy. The album should have been a disaster, but it works. It's all the more noteworthy because Braxton's supposed to be reserved and cool himself. On the reissue front, 1990 saw the usual barrage of great box sets, but my last votes go to two neglected re-releases. The first is called New York Sessions, recorded in 1961 by the late English tenor saxophonist Tubby Hayes. If you like classic Sonny Rollins, check this guy out. Composer Anthony Davis's album, Hemispheres, didn't get much attention when it came out in 1983 or when it was reissued early this year, but it was one of the most ingenious large group records of the last decade. Just as Randy Weston uses his piano like an African drum choir, Anthony Davis uses his orchestra like one. Hemispheres is minimalism for jazz fans. Okay, that makes 10, and I'm out of time.